We're covering the news here today on KUOW's The Record. I'm Bill Radke. The Seattle Police Department had such big plans. Body cameras for 850 officers by the end of this year. The first police department in America to do that. The Department of Justice put up some money for it. The city of Seattle budgeted money. The thinking was when cops wear body cameras, their interactions with people are more transparent, and that's good for everybody. So where are the body cameras? Journalist Mackenzie Funk investigated this for the New York Times Magazine. He says some big questions have brought the program to a halt, like who gets to see all that camera footage, and how do you protect the privacy of people who were filmed without their consent?
There was a Supreme Court decision here in the Washington State Supreme Court that said all police video, effectively, if it's not part of an active investigation, has to be released.
What's wrong with that? That's just more transparency.
Well, there are some logistical problems and there are some privacy issues. The logistics are Seattle, for instance, was sitting on 350 terabytes of video from its dash cam systems, millions of hours. And there are some privacy protections that were already written into the law, and you have to scrub the faces of minors in some cases, and victim of sexual assault in some cases. And so that meant that officers or staff would have to review every bit of that footage before releasing it. Think about if you've ever edited a video or an audio clip, you know how long that takes. It's actually mathematically impossible to release it all under those conditions. And so right at this moment that the world wants body cameras, here in Washington State, we have the realization that adding more footage will bankrupt police departments and bankrupt the city.
Again, this is not a dash cam from inside a car. With body cameras, we're talking about going into people's homes and right up in their face.
Yeah, you see, people say, well, these records are all out there. It's all the same. You know, there's already dash cam. There's already surveillance cam. There are already, you know, police reports, so we can get access to those. What's the difference? And you don't have to really ask that if you've watched any of these videos. I mean, it is intimate. You're in the face of the victims or suspects or whomever the police officers are talking to. And it's important to think about who are these filming. Well, they're filming the public. They're strapped to, attached to the uniform of the officer or even to glasses they wear. They're seeing what the officer sees. So they're not looking at the police. They are looking at the people from the police's perspective. And when officers walk into homes, when they walk into hotels, when they're talking to someone on the street who could be an informant or a victim who doesn't want to be seen talking to the police, they are recording all of that, and they're recording it in high definition, and it's a close-up. It's very cinematic. It's not like these dash cam videos always. It's right there.
In fact, we've come to think of body cameras as saving the most vulnerable, or at least recording their abuse. And you pointed out in your piece that sometimes it's the most vulnerable feeling people who have a problem with body cameras.
Yeah, and I think it's an obvious point, but worth repeating, that those communities that are already most policed and seeing the most police cars and most officers are de facto the ones that are going to be filmed and recorded more under these technologies. And here in Seattle, the first group to really say, hey, hold on a minute, let's really think about this, has been the Community Police Commission. And that was the group designated under the consent decree, under the federal reform effort.
This is the U.S. Justice Department forcing Seattle Police Department to reform.
That's right. It's a coalition that is supposed to speak for the people, actually speak for the community. And they were the first to raise an alarm. And it was because of the nature of the Public Records Act here and the nature of the footage that was soon quickly being released under these requests.
Mac, you've watched hours and hours and hours of this police body cam footage. What did you learn?
First of all, you see that, you know, policing is hard, and that a lot of the daily work of it is dealing with people in stressful situations and dealing appropriately with it, very humanely with it. And at the same time, what I saw, it was disturbing because I saw it on YouTube. I saw a man coming up to police officers and saying that his daughter, who he said was mentally disturbed, was hanging out with some very dangerous people and they needed to go run and save her. He gave her name. Eventually, you see the image of her. I saw a mother get pulled over for drunken driving. I know she's a mother because I found her on Facebook later. She freaked out. She started yelling and screaming and asking to call the babysitter because her kids were home alone. The one that really struck me was an interview with a young woman accused of prostitution in a hotel room somewhere in the state. And she tells her whole life story to the officer.
You know, and the officer tells her, oh, we can blur this even if it came out.
Yeah, and not, as I understand it, the officer was really unhappy when this thing appeared on YouTube and tried to get it taken down. It was more that he didn't know, as he wouldn't have, that a lawyer would determine that there was nothing that had to be redacted under this. And in fact, under the law, it had to be released. It wasn't discretionary. And so this officer, she asked, well, what about these cameras? And he says, well, the picture's pretty clear, but don't worry about it. If the media asks for it, we can blur it. And in fact, this is something I watched on YouTube, and I was able to track this woman down. And I've seen her house on Google Street View. I've seen her social media profiles. She's a person with a life who we would hope wouldn't always be defined by this. Please see us in our worst moments often. It's when you're having your worst day ever is often when you call a police officer. And this is what was showing up on YouTube.
So you have the difficulty in releasing this information to the public that we talked about. You have people, vulnerable people, saying, we don't want to be constantly on police cameras aimed at us. You have the question of when do these things get turned off and on?
You know, there's a moral case, especially after Ferguson, for body cameras. And it's been very clear. And that's that after a study in Rialto, California, it showed that complaints against officers, which could be a proxy for misconduct, went way down when they wore body cameras. And it showed also that use of force by officers went way down when they wore body cameras. And that, armed with the fact that we'll finally know what's going on, I mean, that is a powerful moral argument for having these things.
You call it the self-awareness effect?
That's right. Well, I don't call it. The researchers who are from Cambridge called it that. And it was the idea that these officers, when they're wearing the cameras, would walk up to people and say, by the way, you should know that we're recording. It was a courtesy. But that courtesy was something more. It let both parties sort of sense that they were in this panopticon, really, that they're both being watched and that they should be on their best behavior. And that the Cambridge study surmised that was what was going on. Because everyone realized they were on camera, they were better behaved. And that makes sense, right? It's intuitive. Well, that was the pre-Ferguson case. In fact, it was touted by Taser, which is one of the biggest manufacturers of body cameras, the biggest, in a press release even before it came out in a journal. And it's turned out to have been undermined by later research by these same Cambridge people.
Mac, after all you reported on this and found out about pros and cons of body cams, do you think Seattle's right to pursue body cameras for police officers?
After all of this, I am still as confused as anyone. And what it comes down to for me is the cost. Right now, it's $1.8 million, I believe, is going to be spent on body cameras. And my big question is, because the science itself behind body cameras is so new, because we're, in fact, running this experiment now, because we know that these things can be released, for all those reasons, is this the best use of $1.8 million when also Seattle PD is making substantial progress under the consent decree, doing things that are a lot less sexy? Trainings, new protocols, investigations of use of force when there is force, better reporting, you know, the little things that make a police department better, a cultural change. I question really the amount of money thrown at a tech fix and that it's going to these big contractors like Taser more than I question, of course, the reason why everyone would want them. I am not against body cameras at all if they can be made to work, but I have seen very few cases nationally or here where we've got it right. And so I guess I'm saying it got it right in terms of policy. What should be retained? Who should be able to see it? How should they be able to see it? These are complex problems, and they're being worked out right now. There is a new state law that came into effect in June. It was sponsored by a legislator in Bainbridge Island named Drew Hansen. And it does a lot of protections. It sunsets in 3 years. But
privacy protections
of body cameras. And it gives us some space to work out these issues. So a task force is hammering through all of this now. And so why the rush is my question.
Do you see a world where less and less privacy means we're less and less embarrassed about broadcasting our true selves?
Yeah. I mean, it's already happening. And This is an argument. In fact, I didn't make it into the story I wrote, but I did talk to Bruce Harrell in his office at City Council, and he said, well, think about this. I mean, if I walk to a restaurant down the block, you know, 5 or 6 or 7 cameras are going to have a picture of me as I go. Our expectations of privacy have shifted. And I understand that. In fact, the reason a lot of these things were that the country is getting mad about, and understandably so, all the shootings of young men all across the country, young black men, it's because there is so much video out there. But I would point out is that most of that video to date has been shot by citizens and not by police. And the balance of power and who can access that is immensely different. And the power of the state to record all this and then share it with others, that's a different thing than the sense that you're putting something up voluntarily on Twitter and Facebook. It's part of the same trend, but I do think that we're getting to a point where it's not, you know, what we put out there, but how it's compiled and who holds this stuff.
Seattle-based journalist Mackenzie Funk wrote that piece for the New York Times Magazine. It's called, "Should We See Everything a Cop Sees?"